Welcome to Conversations with Friends, a space for slow, unplanned, and deeply human conversations. I'm Linda, a German in my early 30s, a traveler who has spent more than 5 years exploring the world. And I'm talking to my friend Marco, an Italian in his late 60s, an artist who chose a simple life on the beautiful island of La Gomera after living many different lives across the world. Two friends from different generations, different worlds, coming together to explore what it means to be alive, curious, and connected. We couldn't be more different, and that's exactly why we meet here, as friends across generations to share our thoughts, questions, and stories. Nothing is scripted. We don't know where the conversation will lead, only that it will be real, honest, and rooted in what moves us. This is Conversations with Friends.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
We often say that these are unscripted sessions, but perhaps I have never felt so empty before one, or a clean slate, as I do today.
Yeah, me too. But until now, we always came up with something.
Yeah. I was thinking that it's episode number 7.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very special number.
What's the meaning of 7?
You know, gosh, there are probably as many meanings as there are cultures and practices, but for me, the number 7 symbolizes the 7 major chakras.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think of, which are associated to the 7 endocrine glands that express the hormones that give order to our physical body. So the first are the testicles and ovaries. The second are the adrenal glands on top of the 2 kidneys. They express adrenaline principally, but lots of others. The third are the islets of Langerhans, which are extremely spread out cells. It's not one single gland, it's lots of little ones on top of the pancreas and inside the pancreas, I think, as well. That's the third. The fourth endocrine gland is the thymus, which is above the heart, on the top of your sternum, and it's huge in young babies and then becomes smaller and smaller as we get older. But it's associated with purification, the thymus. Then there is the... hang on a second. In the throat, shaped like a butterfly with 2 wings, one on either side of the epiglottis. And the gland is called... I'll get back to it. And then there's the third eye between your eyes, which is the pituitary gland, which is the master gland. She's the one who tells all the other glands when to function by expressing hormones. So it is almost like the central control system for the endocrine system. And then behind, almost behind in the middle of the two hemispheres of the brain, but back of the pituitary, is the pineal, which is a connection to the heart, to the spirit. Direct connection to... So number seven to me means the seven dimensions that we have and that we are. And maybe number seventh is the highest, which is love, the spirit of love. Mm. The power that gives meaning to everything. So I wonder what the session will entail.
It's probably also our last session, I guess, that we're recording together here in this studio at this time.
Yes. I was feeling the last few days how remarkably creatively fertile I have felt our friendship to be.
Mm.
Just keeps giving.
Yeah.
Keeps creating things and ideas and thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
So it's never stale.
Yeah. And I think even though it was only 2 months that we've spent together now, it feels like we've been through so many chapters.
Yeah.
When I remember 2 months ago, when we like first met, I think I took you to go grocery shopping.
Yep.
And we were in the car and we had the first conversation after not meeting for a year. Our conversations were so different, also topic-wise. I mean, obviously, in 2 months, things happen, and you see some progress, but it feels like, wow, this was forever ago.
Yeah.
And then I have the feeling every time we met, there were like, it was like a totally new chapter. Something new has happened. We talked about it, we made some progress, we experienced something.
Yeah.
And it really built up.
Yeah. But you're right, the stage was set on that first trip to Vallehermoso to do the shopping. Already in the car, driving there, we were talking openly about everything that's happened to us, and it's unusual for me to do that. I believe
that's so interesting because I only know you like that. I'm always thinking, yeah, he's this open guy. He's always having like open conversations with everyone. I don't think that's like an unusual thing for you to do.
It is. It's not because I wouldn't like to have such open conversations with everyone, but. It's really something about the chemistry that makes it happen.
Mm.
And I'm sure that it won't, although this is the last session in the studio, I have a feeling that our friendship will have lots of ways to manifest in the future in ways that we can't imagine right now.
I mean, a month ago we couldn't have imagined this.
Yeah.
It's so interesting how we're always limited in our dreams and visions. We're still so limited.
Yeah.
To what we've already done.
Yeah.
What we've already seen, what we've already seen someone else doing. And I'm always talking about dreaming big and stuff, and I believe in it, but then I realize my biggest dream is just so tiny compared to what's possible, but I have no idea what's possible.
Well, let's explore that. Like, imagine you can lift the veil that separates the mind from infinite possibility, and that you were capable of your highest dreams as a spiritual being having an earthly experience instead of a human being having a spiritual experience.
Mm.
Imagine now that we are angels. And that we came here for a reason. And that our human self would only be fully satisfied if it incarnates the reason, the purpose for the angel. And now we switch identities and we're no longer the human self, we are the angelic being. What does Lindo, the angel, what has she come to do? Take away the veil and just say what comes out.
It's really hard for me to imagine. While you were talking, the first thing that came up when you made this picture, or painted this picture, sort of, was that if I was a spiritual being having the experience of this human experience, I would be so interested in exploring my body, because this is one of the biggest differences that is there. And this just came up while you were talking. I was thinking, like, wow, so many things I think my body is limited in doing. When I see other people doing things, and, you know, just not even about other people, but I think then one of the most interesting things would be exploring my body and using it to create experience.
Yeah.
I think the last interesting thing would be my spirit, because I have this all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So it would probably be in the first place my body and then also my mind, because that's also a very human thing. And it's connected, because it's not my body who has the limits, it's my mind who has the limits, so that I can't use my body in the ways I could.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because what also came up was that I thought, like, oh, I must have, like, a great mission, you know? And then I thought of a lot of what just comes up, like, a lot of what could I change in the world? And how could I have a successful business, whatever? But it didn't, like, it was just like, what? I wouldn't care. I wouldn't care about that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't try so hard for others, or for, like, what footprint do I leave, wouldn't be so interesting. It would be more about self-exploration, experiencing myself. And everything leaves footprints. So it's nothing I have to take care of. It's gonna take care of itself. And this is a new perspective, because now I'm a lot, like, thinking about outcome instead of experience. But I wouldn't, from this perspective, I wouldn't care about the outcome.
Can you name some of the physical experiences that you would, that you sense you have the potential for?
It's super weird, but I'm just learning to trust it. But I get the pictures of like climbing mountains, for example. Like really like things that bring you to a certain like physical level, you know, where like you really experience your body. I didn't see myself laying on a sofa seeing how this feels. That's not what came up in my mind. It was more like, oh, swim and climb a mountain and move it and stuff like this. That was the first thing. It was not that the words came up. It was just a picture I had and what I'm seeing in a picture now. Because also, it's not only that this spiritual being would see me as a human experience, it would also see me as a human experience on this amazing planet. And then there's not only my body to explore and my mind to explore, there's also this planet to explore that is a miracle itself and carries so much beauty and things you would want to see. I think this is why this like strong picture of the mountains came up. That was the first thing. And now that I think about it, this picture, it's not the same picture, but it sounded familiar. Now that I give it more time, I realize that it connects me with a picture that I had once, and like it was sort of a spiritual experience. I was doing an LSD trip and I got connected to, I don't know, the source, and I could interact and ask questions, and the most important message I got was that life is super short. It's just, it will be over in the blink of an eye, and I don't have to worry. I'm like bedded in the most soft way, and all I have to do is experience it, enjoy it, have fun, don't take it too serious. There's nothing you can win in this life. It's not about winning. You can't win it. Just do it and just enjoy it and experience it. And I also got strong pictures in this vision, and it was also with like mountains in the background. It was also with water, and yeah, the pictures, they're not the same, but they're sort of connected. And yeah, it's interesting because every time I'm thinking about this perspective, the same message comes through. And it's not that I'm not following it at all, but I need a reminder sometimes. Because if we close this connection and we're back in our human experience, and we forget that we're connected, then sometimes we also forget that it's really just about fun.
I've heard it said that all forms of life, not just on this planet, but everywhere on the universe, in the universe, and maybe there are many universes, are just God wanting to experience, or God, the creator force, wanting to experience itself as such and such a creature, or such in such and such a world, or in such and such a circumstance, and that we're all emanations of that will to experience. And I was thinking while you were talking that I know inside me that I can fly. That I can go through solid matter. And I would love to, let's say, go into a mountain. Not to get through to the other side, but to go inside the mountains and feel between the atoms and particles that make this mountain and fit myself in there for a minute and communicate with the mountain or the earth, you know, go inside the earth and penetrate, physically become a part of her into the core. Similarly, in the ocean, I would like to become water.
Mm.
And yeah, become water. Feel its properties, its secrets, its memory, because apparently water has memory.
Mm-hmm.
Water holds the memory of the planet. And then there are things that relate more to the mental, like an emotional, like telepathy. That I'm pretty sure I already experienced to a large degree without knowing that that's what it is. Telepathy, teletransportation. Materializing objects. I'm sure that I can do that too. I've had visions and dreams that I'm walking. I'm talking to somebody. Suddenly I feel the need to sit with this person. And as I feel that need and I bend my legs, some kind of a chair forms without me asking for it. It just does, as if the whole planet responds to my needs automatically without me even needing to think. Because my focus can be with this person 100%, and because I think that the interpersonal, angel to angel now, spirit being to spirit being, the connection between us is what powers creativity, you know, and we are inspired by each other, and our interactions give rise to miracles and who knows what. Deep down, I think that that's what powers my deliberate trust. It's like there's a sense that if I trust, I will discover that matter already does respond to me, and that when I sit, a chair appears, or when I sleep, a bed appears, that without superimposing my human, ridiculous little plans, that life would already happen magically and far more powerfully and more creatively. And that all it takes is for that angel being that I am to be allowed to express, for me to take on that identity fully. And then all these things can happen. I'm fascinated right now by the interstellar visitor that's coming to visit us in October, November. It's already in the solar system, and they've given it the name of, I think it's I-3 Atlas. I means interstellar, object number 3, because it's the third one we know about. And Atlas is the name of the observatory that first discovered it.
Mm. And what is it?
We don't know what it is. We know that it has a cloud of plasma around it that is half the size of the sun. I mean, that's big.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge, and it's coming really close. It's coming between us, between our orbit and Mars, I think. When it swings by the sun and then moves on. Because, and, you know, it's plasma cloud, is half the size of the sun. And I wonder if it is going to be activated when it swings close to the sun, so it becomes brighter, and whether it will appear like so luminous that it's, that we'll see it during the day. You know, that it's so big and it's so luminous, it's coming so close that it could be another sun in the sky for a while. I don't know, but nobody does. They don't know how big the core is or what it's made of, except apparently it's very rich in carbon. And the latest estimate is that it could be about around 50 kilometers in length. Now, for a solid object or a comet, that is huge. It's much bigger than anything that has ever come swinging by. But the luminous size of it is what is I'm most curious about. See what that will feel like when it comes around. End of October, it will be at its closest.
That's not that far anymore.
No. Every day it's going faster.
So how can they predict where it's going?
Because they can see its trajectory. They can see its velocity. And they think they've calculated the mass.
Mm.
So as it swings by the sun, its trajectory gets bent on the basis of, you know, gravity, because of the gravity of the sun, its trajectory gets bent. And that's calculatable if you know the mass of the object, the speed at which it's going. You know the mass of the sun, its gravitational power, and its velocity of travel. So that's how they calculate it.
Mm, that's interesting. I think you told me about it yesterday,
yeah.
And I said I would research it, but I didn't, so I will put it back on my list.
Yeah, I told you about it yesterday, and then a video came out, so I watched, by a guy called Stefan Burns. He's really good. I mean, I enjoy it, the way he presents. He's a geophysicist by training, but with a really spiritual bent. So he includes factors that classical geophysicists don't usually entertain or include in their calculations, such as, for instance, the effect of the sun on the Earth's geophysics. Sunspots, coronal mass ejections, if you know what those are.
Not
plasma
really.
Plasma emissions.
You're more like an expert on this area.
Yeah, I guess I love that stuff. Anyway, I'll send you his video, and then you can hear about I3 Atlas.
Yes, that's good.
And the latest. But I3 Atlas comes to mind in this event because as a spiritual being having an earthly experience, I feel that I3 Atlas is meaningful to the continuation of life on Earth somehow, and that it brings vibrational codes that we will absorb because of his passage, bringing like a message from another universe, at least another galaxy, because he's not from our galaxy. We know that. He's much older than the Earth. I3 Atlas. Let's see. I'm curious. But I have a hunch that none of these things happen haphazardly or without meaning.
Mm.
Yeah. It might trigger, that's another thing, it might trigger accelerate our awakening to what I was talking about earlier, telepathy, teletransportation, or any other of these hidden abilities that we have, and make it mature.
Yeah, that's a question I was asking myself while you were speaking about it. Why do you think we're not yet managing to do that?
Well, there are two possibilities. Either we have not evolved, or the human part of ourselves has not evolved to the point where we can express 100% of our potential. You know? And so we are en route towards it. And we are now at a juncture in which we're beginning to wake up to these possibilities. That's one reason that it could be. Another is that, and that's the one that I lean towards, is that we suffer from mass amnesia, that we have forgotten who we are. That we once did experience the fullness of spirit beings as human forms and everything that comprised, but that because of some catastrophic event in the past, probably due to human function, that the shock, like post-traumatic stress disorder and an extraordinarily intense degree, made us forget it. So let's say that we were alive then, and some massive catastrophe happened that destroyed whatever civilization existed then, and we were thrown down to a basic caveman-like experience. Usually such catastrophic events are sudden. And the next generation, our children, would not be able to see that any evidence of the civilization that once was. We would tell them, hey, you know, before that massive asteroid came and impacted the Earth, we could do this, we could do that, we could do the other thing. We had built this and that and the other thing. You see these pieces of iron that you see on the ground, all overgrown with vegetation? Those were train tracks. We used to run trains on them. And the children would say, what the hell are trains? And you would have to explain it. Oh, they were like movable buildings that were transported from one place to the other. They were filled with people and things. And the kids would have a hard time beginning to picture these things. And so after the first generation, maybe for a few generations, it turned into legend, because our children would tell their children, hey, you know, my dad used to say, your grandpa used to say this, that, and the other.
Mm.
But then that story becomes more and more mythologized and transformed, and by the third or fourth generation, forgotten. And so I suspect that we suffer from mass amnesia, and that for whatever reason, at this moment in time, more and more of us are remembering, vaguely remembering what we can be like. And more are working the muscle, the memory muscles, and reactivating memories from the past that give us a sense of potential and of possibility. Way to ask crazy questions, but I mean, it's episode 7.
What did I expect?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such an interesting experiment of thoughts.
Yeah. Exactly. So imagine that our reality as we see it is just an experiment of thought.
Mm.
It's our customary experiment of thought. And I've made my raison d'être, my life, dedicated my life to finding other experiments of thought so that I break out of this paradigm and see what else is possible. It could be the craziest thing that I could possibly do, but it's the most exciting to me.
Mm.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, it all boils down to what and who we think we are.
Mm.
what we do and how we behave is all tied up with identity.
Yeah. And this is where the limits come back in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And even though I have the feeling I'm like open-minded and made so many decisions out of the box already in my life, I still sometimes feel like, wow, so limited.
We all feel that, sweetheart. Don't. That's part of what drives the fact that you feel limited already suggests that you've woken up to an alternative.
That's true.
So, then.
That's true. There was a time when I thought I know everything.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why, you know, the impossible to ignore state of humanity right now and the difficulties it faces can be seen as a crisis point. And the curious thing is that in Mandarin Chinese, the idea form or the lettering that means crisis also means opportunity.
I heard this before.
Yeah.
That's such a great thing.
Yeah. So we see the crisis, but we must also see the opportunity.
Yeah, it's very important to not get lost in the drama.
Exactly. Exactly. The fact that something is breaking up and dissolving and falling apart is actually an opportunity to build something better. In a different way.
And it also shows that it's needed to build something better. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in a crisis. If it would work, we wouldn't have the problem in the first place.
Absolutely.
But this also means we have to stop thinking we could make the old thing work. Right? We just have to open ourselves for the whole new.
That's my approach. No, I'm not suggesting it's the best approach, but it's, I feel that it's completely useless to give it any attention. This thing's falling apart. Let it fall apart. Let's focus on what comes next. And begin to build so that there isn't a long period of time without anything. You know, that there is a...
But also at the same time, you're an expert of letting things fall apart, you know? Like, you have so much experience in it. So for you, it might seem exciting. For other people, it's so threatening.
Yeah.
But you had this experience multiple times in your life that...
Yeah.
Everything can fall apart. It's just step one in a new chapter.
Yeah. It's about death and rebirth. It's not, there isn't just death. There's rebirth. Like, I was reading this week also that there used to be 13 signs in the zodiac. We used to measure the calendar by dividing it into 13, not 12.
Was it at this time when like every month had like 28 days or something? Did I read something about this?
No. Apparently they did not. Not all the months had the same number of days. But they were tied, really tied, to the constellations in the sky and the Earth's rotation that would represent every year the same constellations. And taking the east-west horizon and assuming a perpendicularity to the rotation of the Earth. In other words, the Earth pretty much rotates east-west. Well, you would take the image of the sky directly above, not the constellations that are far away, but the ones that are perpendicular to the rotation of the Earth. And those are supposedly the 12 signs of the zodiac, the constellation of Aries, of Taurus, and etc. Except that at some point, they decided not to count one because they wanted to make it neat. And yeah, and that 13th sign is Ophiuchus.
Never heard of it.
Well, are you hearing it now? And Ophiuchus is a serpent carrier, and it rules death and rebirth.
No way.
Yeah. In other words, it was around the time when the Christian church was built that they decided to get rid of the rebirth part of the picture. Because in order to successfully dominate human consciousness, there had to be fear of death.
Mm.
They had to feel that. They had to have a way of manipulating humans.
Mm.
And the serpent bearer made suffering as good as joy.
Mm.
There was no great it wasn't better to be happy than sad.
Mm.
It wasn't better to be content than discontent.
Mm.
They were all experiences that were part of the cycle that culminated in rebirth. And life would start again. So in my life, I've had quite a few experiences that's the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because of when I was born. In the East is this ascendant sign. At the time of birth, there is a constellation in the east that is your ascendant. And mine would have been Ophiuchus, which is now a part of Sagittarius. And so yours would have been too, Ophiuchus, because you're also a rising Sagittarius.
Why am I not surprised? Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. It is. So we've been living in a mindset that isn't actually a natural reflection of things at all. And then you have some Eastern spiritual philosophies that believe in reincarnation, which is, I mean, they already know where the next Dalai Lama will be born, when it will be born and where, the Buddhists.
Mm.
So they go and look for him.
Mm.
And when this baby is born, they say, there he is. That's how far Buddhism takes death and rebirth. The speed is fantastic, is incredible. The Dalai Lama barely dies and his replacement is already there.
Mm.
But the same concept of death and rebirth that we see in reincarnation, reflected in the belief of reincarnation. It's reflected in every aspect of our lives.
Mm.
So that when I stop being a tech entrepreneur, or and I become an artist painter with a penchant for Jungian psychology, and I change from one thing to another, Ophiuchus proves that there is a death of a cycle and immediately the rebirth of something else, and we don't have to be afraid of change as much as we are.
Yeah.
By the way, this is called the thyroid. It came back to me.
You took it serious, the number 7.
Huh?
You took it serious. The episode 7?
Don't fuck around with number 7.
I like it.
So, blessings to us both for the next cycle.
Yeah.
You go with my blessings and my love and my best wishes. And who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah.
That's exciting. Who knows what's gonna happen?
Yeah.
Who would have thought that we create 7 podcast episodes?
I don't know, we could have done 12. 12 is also a magic number.
Yeah, we can still continue.
But 13 apparently is even
better. Yeah, you know. There's so many magical numbers.
I know.
Thank you so much for being here, for listening, for sharing this space with us. May these conversations remind you to open yourself to people who are different from you and to discover what you can learn from them. We'd love to hear your thoughts and reflections. Feel free to share them with us. Check the show notes for more about us and join us again for the next conversation.